Meeting will come to order. I'm sorry, I didn't see that that you had arrived. I was thinking you were still out in the hall. Please, Mr. De La Forest, are you coming forward? Are you several of you? We'd invite you to come forward if you would. Thank you so much. We had a very quick invitation to you, and we're grateful that you were willing to meet with us. And though my first question was going to be status of negotiation, my understanding is that you're before us not empowered to make decisions on the governor's behalf, and so we'll take that into consideration and perhaps pose our questions a bit differently, and they might be questions you could take back then for consideration. We do have a strong commitment. We read the governor's letter very carefully, and he did indicate that the idea of assembling a bill behind closed doors is something he would find unacceptable. He talked about his desire for transparency, and we respect that, and so we'll do this public discussion, I think, as he requested. And so one of the things, I'll just lay out some of my questions, and there might be Senator Langseth and others who have. Our hope would be that we have the opportunity to negotiate with, if not the governor, someone in his office who's empowered, so that when that decision is, that mutual decision is reached between us, that we could all be assured that is, in fact, his decision as well, that we could depend on that final decision as one that would get us a signed bill. And so I think we're looking for your advice and his advice about who is that appropriate person that we would negotiate with. And then I think we're looking for as specific advice as we can, what specific projects need to be in and what dollar amount. We have some suggestions. We've totaled those up. They're about $70 million that he is suggesting to be removed from the bill. And then what specific projects must be in, and maybe at what amount also. And we have some suggestions from him. That additional spending, I think, is about $100 million. So we're sorting through some of the issues he has put on the table for us. And then, of course, because we want a bill, and I think all of Minnesota wants a bill, we would hope at the end of that conversation that there could be an agreement that the bill we have arrived at will be signed in its entirety. That would be a goal that all of us would have. And of course, on our part, we also need to be clear to the governor what our priorities are in the bill, what bottom line we might have. And at least in part, we always do that with an idea of the results, what will be the results from the passage of this bill. We believe one of those is certainly jobs, and it's why we have been so eager to move quickly. The other is, as we have made the argument, so much of this is a contributing factor to some form of economic development, whether it's Thief River Falls or Winona or Rochester or St. Paul. We see a lot of these investments as having an economic impact, and because they range from higher education to wetland restoration, that diversity of investment, we think, potentially can be a strength for us. So those are some of the goals that I would personally have. Senator Langseth, if you would like to suggest.
I came here to listen to the governor's office, so I'll reserve judgment at this point.
Okay. Anyone else who wants to? I think this is the start of a conversation. We obviously have to move rather quickly on today and tomorrow. So we are, I should say, for everyone here, several of us are invited to the governor's office at 4 for a more private conversation. So there are kind of two parts of this. We have a public conversation going, and also I believe one at 4 that will be a private conversation. So other questions or issues that people would like to
Madam Chair, could we hear from the governor's office?
Yes.
Madam Chair, thank you, and Chairman Langseth, thank you. For the record, my name is Chris DeLaForest. I'm Governor Plenty's Director of Legislative Affairs. And as you know, the governor has heard your request to meet with him again personally, and he has extended that invitation for 4 p.m. today and looks forward to meeting with the two of you to clear up any questions that you might have regarding the bonding bill. We know that the governor has made numerous pronouncements and has issued written documents with respect to some of his concerns about your bonding bill, and he's happy to speak about them again this afternoon at 4 p.m.
Madam Chair, is that going to be an open meeting? The governor was critical of us for doing some things behind the scenes. Is that going to be an open meeting for the media?
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Langseth, it will certainly be as transparent as what happened on Sunday with respect to the crafting of the conference report, but it is the governor's practice, and we know he intends to negotiate and speak to the legislature in the same way we always have. I mean, we know that, for example, the governor does not testify to working groups or committees, and at 4 p.m., certainly he hopes to hammer out a framework for how to proceed to get a negotiated bill. You recall that the governor has said numerous times publicly, including at his State of the State, that he thinks a bonding bill should happen. So he's eager to speak with you at 4 p.m. to lay out that framework.
Mr. DeLaForest, I started my remarks by quoting from his letter, and I am saying we totally agree with him. I mean, he's fairly clear this lack of transparency is unacceptable, and so I think we would be eager to follow that direction if we could.
Right. And Madam Chair, that's correct. What the governor is referring to is he knows we have a process here, and he would prefer that it be followed. For example, the conference committees have always met publicly. They've started the meetings by going through side-by-sides. For example, with what happened on Sunday, the governor has mentioned Representative Howes was ill. He insists that those conferees, along with Senator Coring, be included as equals with respect to the conference committee. And again, we know that the practice has been for the governor for the past 7 years here that he does not participate directly with working groups or committees themselves. He always appoints someone in his stead. And again, we can hammer out the framework, and he'd like to talk about that at 4 p.m.
And I think we would absolutely understand that he would send a representative. I think my only question is that person authorized or empowered to actually sort of close the deal? What is the accepted agreement that we have that's going to be hopefully binding on both sides?
Madam Chair, I don't know whether it was 2 years ago or 4 years ago, the governor, when we were in the office, the governor sat right there through most of the discussion as we went through the bill. And why has that changed?
Madam Chair, thank you. Senator Langseth, it didn't change. As the governor noted, his office was open for more than 13 hours on Sunday, and we were never invited to the table or to participate. We never received any notice regarding the conference committee other than public notices that were printed. And so, again, any part of the negotiating process means that we are here and we stand ready to negotiate, but we need to be included.
Well, Madam Chair, I want the governor to be included, and it appears he is not. I'm not sending a representative to speak for me. It kind of seemed like the governor should be involved, as he was sometimes in the past.
Okay. And Madam Chair and Senator Langseth, the governor will be engaged in the same way he always has with these bills. It certainly is not a departure from past practice to have the governor send representatives. After all, he is the chief executive of the state. He has a number of people who help him on any given day accomplish objectives and work with the legislature, and that process will be no different this time. You won't see a departure from the way the governor normally handles the binding negotiations.
And I respect that, and on Sunday, we were grateful that MMB came and made a presentation to the conference committee on some of the language that they had requested, and so we had a presentation from MMB, and also because one of the major issues was the Moose Lake issue, we invited Dennis Benson to the table. So we did have representatives at the conference committee on Sunday who were quite helpful in I think what my only question was, obviously, when you negotiate, you want to feel that the negotiation is sort of a final word, that we have a sure thing that we're agreeing to. Representative House?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. DeLaForest, do I call you Mr. or do I call you Commissioner, Chris?
No, I don't have any title other than Mr., Madam Chair and Representative
House. All right, Mr. DeLaforest, I think what we're trying to send, and I would speak for my caucus on this issue, that at the meeting at 4 o'clock, when the groundwork is laid out for how the bonding bill will be formed, what the numbers will be, the language will be, that's a good thing, that we can walk away from that meeting and know the ground rules and know the framework. I think what we would like at that meeting, and if you would be so kind as to ask the governor, that through our negotiations and consultation about the bill, that if we have questions, that there is someone from his office representing his authority that would be available on short notice or in the room with us that could give a yes or no answer on behalf of the governor. Now, obviously, there may be some issues that might rise to a level that that person couldn't answer, but we would appreciate at least that 80% of those questions, someone could be in the room to have the authority to speak for the governor. We would request that from you.
And Madam Chair, Representative Powell, I'll be sure to pass that on to the governor. Thank you.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, since I have not been invited to the 4 o'clock meeting, I wanted to make some comments and some concerns that I have with the with the governor's proposals, if that's what you're going to be negotiating with. First of all, the governor appoints the Board of Trustees for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and he appoints the chair of that board, which I believe is still David Olson, the president of the Minnesota Chamber. His appointees approved the MNSCU priority list, and we in the Senate and in the House respect the process that MNSCU goes through. It's a very thorough process. Each of the projects are submitted and go through a thorough review. And so when we have to cut, we cut from the bottom of the list and we make a decision about how much HEPRA funding we feel that we can afford to do. The governor did not respect that process, even though it's his board and his chairman. So I do have concerns that with the governor's recommendation, there doesn't appear to be any rationale. It seems very random as to which projects got picked and which projects got jumped over. And so I would request that the governor respects the process that he is very intimately involved in, and that these are his people that he's appointed to be on the board. And if he has concerns, he should express them at the point when the board is making their recommendations, not kind of after the fact. I also wanted to comment that there's a publication called Market Watch that the Wall Street Journal publishes, and during the last several years, the metropolitan area in Minnesota has been ranked as the number one best place to do business in the country. And the rationale is that we have a well-trained workforce, and that's the responsibility of MNSCU, largely. We have a top research facility, the University of Minnesota. And then also the family is looking for other amenities. When businesses decide to move here and executives, they want good schools, and they've chosen Minnesota for that, and they want a good cultural and recreational climate. They want parks, they want museums, they want zoos, they want trails. They want a good economic climate. They want orchestras, they want all those activities, all those cultural activities and recreational activities. So in order to keep a strong state, we are very conscious of that in the state. We hear from the people who live here and from the people who are interested in living here. It's not our climate they come for, it's our culture that we have to offer them. And that's why this bill has those kind of amenities in it. We consider that as vital to the economic future of our state as any number of other things that others might consider vital.
Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, Mr. DeLaForest, I had the opportunity and the interest in having some discussions and asked Mr. Benson to come before us Commissioner Benson, Dennis Benson, from the Moose Lake Hospital facility. The governor has said that he wants the $89 million in that proposal. I have looked at the drawings, looked at the projected needs, have looked at the, or understand the constitutional requirements that we have in that population. I also know that there's some, you know, all of us have concerns about the population and the potential release of someone who is extremely dangerous, but I'm also concerned and aware of the double jeopardy part of the U.S. Constitution. What I am concerned about is a couple of things. I think the state, when following the governor's own type of words, can do things a lot smarter and better at a cheaper cost than just going down the same path that we've chosen in the last years. So we need to have some re-examination of what makes sense, how do we do it smarter, how do we do it cheaper, and still stay within the ramifications of having the best public safety for our citizens within our constitutional constraints. In the bonding bill that's proposed, there's a proposal to look at trying to do those things. It was passed on the House and strengthened, I think, in conference committee to make sure that we are doing things smarter for this population, doing things in a cost-effective way of doing things. And in looking at the long-term implications of that and not just the short-term implications, I know that there are some needs up at that facility that we have to do on a short-term basis. But I think for us to do the proposal that is before us right now is not doing things smarter, not doing things in a more cost-effective way into the future. I would like to have the governor re-examine that proposal. I think that the testimony that was given to us by Commissioner Benson was that at least we can cut that down to $61 million in the short term, as we need. In fact, it is my opinion that infrastructure is also being overbuilt at this particular time. If we're going to do things that we've always done the same way in the future, then you're going to have a huge cost in the future. And I know the governor has always stated that he wants to do things smarter and better and cheaper. So I request that you re-examine that proposal in its entirety. I think you could do what needs to be done in the short term for a considerable amount less than the $61 million. And then as we go through, examine what needs to be done in a smarter basis for that population. There isn't anybody around this table or in this room or in this state that wants to have dangerous people out. But we also don't want to have the type of throwing money at a problem that's not solving a problem in the long run and not taking the opportunity to look at doing things smarter and more cost effective. So I respectfully ask, in a very serious tone, that you take a very quick look at that proposal in its entirety, and I think we can make a good case for a much cheaper short-term and a much more cost-effective long-term solution to this problem.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, obviously that is something that will be addressed within the context of broader negotiations once they begin in earnest. But I would simply refer you back to the governor's words. He does consider taking these dangerous sexual predators off the street and committing them to programs like this to be of the highest priority. That doesn't mean that he is unwilling to listen to viable alternatives if they exist. But I just want to be very clear for the working group today and for the record that, again, he considers the Phase 2 expansion to be of the utmost importance. And we can leave it for the details for later about how that might be accomplished. DHS and Mr. Benson can weigh in on that subject as well. But it is clearly a high priority. And I'd like to, again, state for the record, as I watched the testimony on Sunday, to be clear that the $61 million sum refers to only improving infrastructure and not increasing bed space. And the governor believes that the Phase 2 expansion, which prices out currently at $89.7 million and includes additional bed space, is important and should be part of a final product. But again, that is all subject to negotiation and what will be addressed within the context of the broader discussion.
Well, Madam Chair, Mr. DeForest, I don't think you heard my words. Let me repeat them. There isn't anybody that doesn't have the same goal in mind of having public safety. Let me repeat also that I think you can do things smarter and cheaper, and not only in the short term but in the long term. But if the decision is made that we have to do the $89 million, then all my breath that I used was breathless. I could have saved it. Because I do think in negotiations, and I'm asking you to take a look at the opportunities we have to not go down the same road, to do things smarter and cheaper in the long run as well. I understand the problem we have. I understand it very, very carefully. But I've also done some examining of it, and I'm asking you to have an open mind, and the governor to have an open mind, to take a look at other opportunities we may have, not different facilities, but within that facility itself, to be able to manage that population on a cheaper basis. And I want that very clear in my request.
Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, the governor's office will approach, again, these negotiations with an open mind.
And Mr. De La Forest, I think the reason this wasn't an easy decision for us is if you listen to the committee and floor debate, there was sort of bipartisan concern around cost, around changing policy, around vacant space. And so it was not a decision arrived at easily. And I'm assuming the governor has seen the language that Representative Paymar drafted for the conference committee, asking the three commissioners, corrections, public safety, and DHS to do some work on all of those sort of unanswered questions that we had, and to come up with a recommendation that would come out of those departments. So it's at least one of the ideas on the table. Representative Wiginias.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we were discussing this with Mr. Benson, one of the questions that I asked was, what does the $61 million include? And it was my assumption, my takeaway from that did include some bed space. And you're saying no. So it is difficult for me to think that treatment rooms in a kitchen are going to cost $61 million. It's a very hard thing for me to just hard to believe, frankly. So I think we need a better understanding. Are you correct that it does include no bed space? Am I correct that it includes some bed space? If so, how much? And if it's just treatment and the facilities that would go around that, perhaps a kitchen, is $61 million for that the correct sum? Mr. Benson said he would get back to the architect and then come back to us. We haven't heard those numbers, and I think that's basically the question that you're being asked.
Well, again, Madam Chair, thank you, and Representative Wiginias. I wouldn't presume to speak on behalf of DHS or Mr. Benson. Again, we know that this is a priority for the governor, and I'll leave it at that. I think it's a subject that will undoubtedly be part of broader negotiations.
Madam Chair. Senator Lynch and then Senator Pappas. Unless yours is to this one and hers is going on to a different.
Madam Chair, I'll yield.
Mine is to this one.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair and members, it just seems to me that this is the ultimate in throwing money at a problem. I mean, the governor's proposing spending almost as much on 600 sex offenders as on 200,000 Minsky College students, $89 million, $93
million. Senator Lynch.
Madam Chair, different topic?
Different topic.
Madam Chair, Mr. De La Forest, the governor has publicly expressed concern about the inclusion of civic centers in the bill. And as you are aware, there are a number of such proposals from all across Minnesota. He didn't make any mention of this in the letter that he has provided to the committee. And I would just request that if there's additional clarification that could be provided at the 4 o'clock meeting, I think that would help us in our deliberations.
Madam Chair and Senator Lynch, thank you. I'll make sure that's part of the discussion.
Senator DeLange.
Madam Chair, Mr. De La Forest, when the governor sent us his letter, he sent his bill along with the bonding bill. And he said, I will sign a bill in its entirety which contains these recommendations. Now, it has been my feeling all along what he wants us to do is pass his bill. What he said in this particular letter says that. Isn't there any deviation here? He seems to think that we got to put his things in there that aren't there, take the things out that we have that he doesn't have, and pass his bill. I just would like to mention something to you. It wouldn't pass. It wouldn't pass the legislature. I mean, we aren't going to pass something that has not one project for all the state universities in the state of Minnesota. There are other very, very glaring omissions. Now, I've been around for six governors, and we always felt the legislature and the governors, when we went into session, there would be negotiations and there would be compromise in the end. With this governor, it seems like that isn't part of his agenda. And that really bothers me. We have to compromise. This is a democracy. And in his letters and his comments, I don't see where democracy is present.
Madam Chair and Senator Lang, thank you. Certainly, we were not invited to the conference committee. Be clear about that. We were willing to participate in the conference committee deliberations. We weren't invited. Again, the office was open for 13 hours. We never received an invitation of any kind. More than that, the governor understands full well that there will be a compromise bill, and there should be a compromise bill. He's expressed that many times. He expressed that at the meeting you attended last Wednesday. Again, the governor believes that this process will unfold, for the most part, the way that it has in past years with him. I don't believe there's ever been a bonding bill that was signed during Governor Plenty's tenure or the tenure for any other governor, of any other governor for that matter, where the governor just had his bill signed or the legislature just had their bill signed. We understand that whether it's this working group or a conference committee or however this plays out, is there will be negotiations and there will be a negotiated bill. I think we all know that.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. De La Forest. While some of the civic centers weren't specifically mentioned, one from my district was specifically mentioned, and I just want to point out that when federal money is available for these types of projects, and you have matching money in the area of 2 to 3 times as much as what is in the bonding bill, and it results in people going to work, and it results in promoting an entire area of the state and has a regional effect, that I think we're very justified in thinking that these are good projects. And based on past actions such as the DEC or Bemidji, Crookston, the Twin Stadium, Gopher Stadium, these are all venues that have been signed by the governor and promoted by the governor, and we've used bonding money to build. And so I think the fact that these civic centers and event centers are in here is are an indication of what we believe has been past practice of this administration and is also a way of promoting the regions and getting people to come into the state from outside of the state and spend money. But having said that, I want to point out that one of the reasons this bill was passed as swiftly as it was is because of the dire economic straits that we have in Minnesota and in the rest of the country, and that putting people back to work in Minnesota is extremely important to all of us, and that the quicker we get this bonding bill signed into law, the quicker we can get people back to work. And I'm just concerned that I guess I got to ask you, is the governor concerned about putting people to work and getting this bill signed in a hurry? Because we want to be able to have people working in June and not have to wait till September or October if the bill gets signed at a later date.
Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni, of course the governor is concerned about jobs. Everyone here is obviously a difference of opinion about how we arrive at that. But the governor is also mindful of the fiscal environment, and that certainly has caused him in part to craft the bill that he did. We all know that Minnesota Management and Budget said that the budgeted amount for a bonding bill would be $725 million general obligation. The governor expressed that concern numerous times, and yet the size of the bill did not change throughout the process. There was no compromise with respect to the size of the bill. And so given the fiscal environment that we are in, we know that despite admittedly low interest rates, for example, that bonding money is borrowed money, and it has to be paid back with principal plus interest. And so the governor is also mindful of the fact that we have debt obligations out there anytime we have a bonding bill, and so he has attempted to strike the right kind of balance. And he felt that $685 million general obligation was similar or very close to the $725 million that was budgeted, while conversely, he believes that just shy of $1 billion GO is simply too heavy.
Hey, Madam Chair.
Senator?
Yes, and we got that message, but we also got a message from Budget and Management that the bonding capacity in the state of Minnesota could be as high as $1.6 billion this year. Now, it seems to me that $1 billion is somewhere between $725 million and $1.6 billion or $1.7 billion. And when you get messages like that from the administration, and we went way closer to the 725, I personally would have liked to have gone to $1.5 billion, but the chair people would not let me do that. And so we ended up at $1 billion instead. And so there's some mixed messages coming out of the administration also. And this bill was a really good compromise, I think. And so you, when you have the combination of the need for jobs, the bad economy, the low interest rates, you have a low cost on materials, now is the time to build and now is the time to bond. And I don't think it's a time to say we have to make sure that we don't spend too much.
And Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni, just to conclude this to clear up with respect to debt management guidelines, those guidelines are intended to last for a long period of time. It was never meant to send a message or to suggest that the governor would immediately go up to the debt limit under the new debt management guidelines and then try to move forward beyond that. One of the messages that we heard from the bond houses is they like as much stability as possible. And I know there's been a great deal of debate engendered within new debt management guidelines. We probably do not have the time to get into that today. But suffice it to say, the governor views the new debt management ceiling as a long-term type of proposition where we're not immediately going up to the limit and then facing a choice later on down the road, perhaps even just 2 years hence.
And I think we would absolutely agree with that, which is why we stayed below $1 billion, because the new debt service guidelines established by the administration, as he said, would have allowed for $1.7 billion. So we thought we were being quite conservative, agreeing that we were going to stay under $1 billion. And as Senator Tomasoni observes, that is probably closer to the governor's number than the limit was. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, and Mr. De La Forest. And I do have to thank you for being so available during the process. I know I've met with you, and I appreciate that. You know, just a call to you, and you were there in my office. I appreciate that. The committee process worked very well this year, and I just want to reiterate the fact that we did talk about the number of jobs in almost every case in the parts that we put into the bill, and to reiterate what Senator Tomasoni said,
we were counting the number of jobs, and I had to be prepared in the committee process to tell the number of jobs that would be included in a project, and also not, and especially the good-paying jobs. And I have some large corporations in my district, and I do talk to them a lot, and they do like to stay here, and they want to continue to stay here. And it's because of our amenities, as Senator Pappas mentioned. But I do want to mention that we did count the number of jobs as accurately as we could, and we did that for a couple of months. So, and I'm pleased with the process of negotiation that's going to happen now, and thank you for what you've done so far.
Madam Chair and Representative Scales, you're not just saying that because you know my mom, right?
Representative Solberg.
I know your mother, too. She introduced me to her, and she's a strong Democrat.
Hey, Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, you're absolutely right, but I think Representative Rukavina has already whooped that out of me on more than one occasion for the past 6 years.
Representative House.
Final comment,
yes.
If you don't mind, Madam Chair.
Yes.
To the point that Senator Tomassoni brought up, you know, Senator Tomassoni, I don't care how big the Bonney bill is. I suggested at one point $1.6 billion, thinking maybe 30% of it would be used this coming year. So if 30% of the billion is used, that's $300 million would get on the ground this summer. This will help the economy in Minnesota, but it will not relieve the pressure from unemployment. It'll be a filler for the private sector. But to think that you'll have something on the ground by June, it's just not going to happen. I've spent my whole career in construction. It takes time, planning, architectural, engineering, permit fees, PCA, you name it. I've even worked on government jobs in the state of Minnesota. I've bid on government jobs in the state of Minnesota. It takes a long, long time. It is good we get it out the door, but to think we'll have people working by June of any significant number is just not going to happen.
The one segment that I think would beg to differ is MNSCU, because we have pushed them for so long that they told us that from the moment we passed the bill, they would need 3 months for bid letting, I think, and then they were ready to go. So that group, anyway, might be different.
Well, and Madam Chair, to that point,
Senator Thomas,
virtually all of the projects that we put in the bill are shovel ready, and it's a matter of knowing they're getting the money. And if you wait until the end of May to sign a bonding bill, for sure we're not going to get them on the ground this summer. So I don't think we can afford to take the risk of not doing that.
Madam Chair, dinner at Mancini's between you and I. If we pass this next week, that 10% of the bids are let, bonds are let.
We're all witnessing that here.
June 15th, I'll even go halfway into June.
He'll have to pay, but
we'll see.
The issue is when it gets signed and what is in the bill.
You know, with the Senate, there's always complications there.
Representative Wiginius.
Well, I was just going to add, what MNSCU did was show us the leadership of this is ground ready, I mean, shovel ready. And so everybody moved to come up to their standard. And I think that's what happened. I saw that in DNR. So it was MNSCU that set the bar, and people were trying to get to it. And they did.
Well, I think just summarizing, we hear loud and clear one of the messages in the governor's letter. And he says lack of transparency is unacceptable, and so we really do want to conduct the negotiation in public. And just to review, here's what we understand so far is are the specifics. And if we've missed any, there was a February 9th letter where the governor indicated he had problems with the Potter Center for the Arts, the Arrowhead Sports Facility, the Theater Worth Olympic Training Center, and then mentioned various civic centers. Then in a February 22nd letter, he mentioned the Minneapolis Sculpture Garden, the Theater Worth Olympic Training Center, and various sports facilities and civic centers and trail enhancements. And so we've quantified, and then he did, I think, mention a project in a news conference yesterday or today. And that was the Princeton joint
public safety building. So if you add, even if you take not various civic centers, but all civic centers, we have so far about $70 million in projects that he's indicated he would have problems with and presumably want removed from the bill. Then we have heard the following that he wants in: the Moose Lake facility, fully funded, Oak Park Heights, and I don't know if it was both projects or whether it was just the perimeter security, pre-design of an emergency operations center, and a Minneapolis Veterans Home. The new spending would be approximately $100 million. So those are the specifics we've heard so far. If that is all inclusive, then we have clear direction. But if there, unless there is more specificity about what he refers to as various sports facilities and trail enhancements, so just for the record, that's our understanding from a variety of letters and news conferences that we've compiled thus far.
Madam
Chair. Senator Langstedt.
At this 4 o'clock meeting, I received an invitation, but other than Representative Hausman, I don't know who's going to be there. If there's going to be Republicans from the legislature there, I would certainly appreciate it if it would be the Republican that's on my committee. It seems like if we're invited there, we should be able to choose who we bring and not the governor decide who we bring.
Senator, I've actually invited my ranking minority member, so you might want to do this.
Okay, but who's invited and who isn't invited? I mean, I guess I'll bring whoever I decide to bring.
Well, Senator Lang said it'll be up to the, Madam Chair, it'll be up to the troopers to decide who gets in the door there. No. But the invitation.
Oh.
That,
I wouldn't let him in either.
They're big. Madam Chair, and Senator Lang said, you know, the governor had invited both chairs of the committees, similar to what he did last week, and as well invited the Senate Minority Leader and the House Minority Leader as well. They wanted to participate. Certainly, if those ranking minority members are invited, you know, we would certainly not turn them away. But seating, as you know, in the governor's office as well is certainly limited, and this is the first meeting. We all understand that this will be a rather lengthy, perhaps not so lengthy process, but certainly we would not conclude a bill in one meeting with the governor. We know that all the members and conferees want to weigh in. We know there are members of the public who would like to weigh in the process as well. And so the governor intends to be very respectful of that process and knows that this is one meeting today.
Well Madam Chair, I'm still a little bit confused. As Senator Sinjum, for example, isn't on my committee. Senator Coring is. I thought we're going to come and meet with you as a committee. And if you're going to invite the two minority leaders, then why not the two majority leaders? It kind of looks like it's going to be a bit of a stacked meeting. And if we're going to meet with you, it seemed like we should have quite a bit to say about who comes and not have the governor tell us who comes.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Langstedt, the governor was responding to your request to meet with him, so he made himself available. And it actually would be a meeting with more people present than the one that was held last Wednesday. Whereas, you know, the principals who were involved were yourself and Chair Hausman and the governor, essentially. And there were some select staff members there, such as myself, as well as the leaders.
Well Madam Chair, my members of my committee were coming and going as they could. As you know, we couldn't have five from both sides in that meeting, but my committee members were coming and going throughout the evening, including the Republican on my committee.
Well, I think we have an invitation for a private meeting with the governor at 4, and I heard Representative Howes bring a message from his caucus to this meeting as well, so that would, I think, would be a sentiment you'd maybe want to express there as well. So do I see any other?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Lance. I just want to know, is this a private meeting or is this a public meeting?
At 4.
Is this a private meeting or is this a public meeting?
Madam Chair and Senator Langseth, it is a meeting that the governor has always held, and similar to the one that was held last Wednesday. And he hopes you will you'll attend and you'll participate as you did last Wednesday.
Are you attending? Hmm? Are you attending
the meeting?
The meeting as well.
Well, I got to see who's going to be there.
Senator Langseth, we'd love to have you there. Governor would like to see you.
Madam Chair, you know, I understand that, but when you invite representatives from this committee, this conference committee, it kind of seems like the representatives from this conference committee should be able to decide who comes and not the governor. Senator Sinjum is not on my committee. Senator Coring is. Senator Coring was all over the state of Minnesota at on site. So I object to the governor deciding who can be there. Well, I'm not sure whether I'm going to be there or not, but we'll check things out here a little bit. I don't like this private meeting stuff. I mean, when we're constantly being criticized, and then this has to be a private meeting, that seems to be a bit hypocritical.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Langseth, we hope that whether it's a working group or a conference committee going forward, we'll have the same public process that we've had in the past with respect to that, and the governor's office would certainly like to participate.
I think there are no further questions, and so at this point, the meeting is adjourned.